Hey everybody, welcome to Snapcast. I'm Alex.
I'm Jerry.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Chris.
Alright, so this is going to be a little bit more of a laid back week here for, you know, the Christmas holiday and stuff. Not a lot is going on anyway. Spoiler season is on hold until January. There's no events and stuff. So we're going to do a little bit of news stuff, and then we're going to just gonna shoot the shit. We got Star Wars to talk about again, like we did last year. Pokemon Sun and Moon. So that'll be the second part. What have you guys been up to?
So I went to an IQ, the Legacy IQ up here. I played Eldrazi, and wow, did we have like so many storm decks. Like I knew of all the storm variants, but there was even one that kind of blew me away. This guy was playing a Belcher Storm list where he was playing mainboard Leyline of Anticipation, the one that gives your stuff flash. He played mainboard Force of Will and mainboard Day's Undoing. And it was the funnest thing to watch. But I top 8ed and lost in top 8 to Blue Red Sneak and Show.
Couldn't compete with the Sneak?
Nah, it's Eldrazi, man. You lose to that deck. I mean, yeah, Chalice kind of stops them from cantripping, but if they have it, they just have it. Like, you have to have Endbringer or you just lose.
That's actually my favorite thing about playing Alurin now, is playing Sneak and Show, where they're like, Emrakul, and you're like, Alurin, and they're like, this can't go bad, and you're like, I win, and they're like, oh.
Yep, they just lose on the spot. Like, the crazy. So
what about you, Rob? What have you been up to?
Haven't been able to get out to play too much Paper Magic. We just finished up our last week of work before we take the sub back, which is kind of sad because that means soon I'm going to be going underway. But in the Magic world, though, Jerry taught me to play Ad Nauseam on stream, which is cool. We did some Popper, and also we hit our 75th follower, so we'll be announcing that giveaway later.
I'm pretty sure we've all played Ad Nauseam now, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Except Bobby.
Yeah, it's not controlling enough for him.
No, it's not.
Not enough pact and negations.
Maybe if he would main deck Verdict, he'd be about it. What he been up to, Chris?
I hopped on the stream with Jerry and Rob, and then I've just been kind of reaching my tentacles out and finding some more people that play close to me, so maybe I can do a little bit more traveling. That's about it. Been keeping it low-key. Picked up some more pieces so I can get back into Standard. Hopefully play some games of that here soon. Because, I mean, that's the big scene around here is Standard. Modern's kind of drying up.
Yeah, I actually missed that about the East Coast. Here it's the opposite. Standard's drying up. Everybody's playing Modern.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's the nature of areas,
yeah,
you know,
we had a good Modern scene, but it's just there's not as many nearly as many big events for it. I'll say, you know, the PPTQs or IQs, they're just haven't seen them lately around here.
Hey, you got to go up to DC to do all that stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. And events we had the Players Championship, won by the Miracle Man himself, Joe Lissette.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I'm pretty much on the back of Legacy, going 3-1 with Miracles. And then 3-0 with Teamer Energy combo in Standard. Just pummeling some people. And then a spicy Modern choice. Didn't really pay off too much, 2-2, but Green-Black Tron. Main decking was what, all four Collective Brutalities?
Yeah.
I believe so, yeah.
What do you guys, how do you feel about this version of Tron?
The only real black cards he had were the four main deck Collective Brutalities, then inside he had four Ravenous Traps. So, other than that, I don't see a reason to go black. I like the spice for it. Nobody saw it. But, no.
Yeah, it was one of those things where, like, he's spicy, but it didn't pay off because he's still 2-2.
I get where he was going with it. I mean, Collective Brutality is the card that's really good against his bad matchups in Burn and what's it called again? Infect. So I mean, I get where he was coming from. But it feels like if you don't have it, you still lose anyways. So why nerf your deck for it?
Right.
Right.
I think Pyroclasm is just too good to have.
Yeah, I don't know. And I understand Ravenous Trap expecting a lot of dredge, but
you was right.
I mean, yeah, it sucks to draw it after, but yeah, you can still cast it. Like, you don't have to have black mana to cast it. You just wait. They're gonna dredge eventually. In other words, their deck doesn't do enough. Like, if dredge is being slow and not taking aggressive dredges to play around Ravenous Trap, they're just gonna get outclassed by Karn and Ugin, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. All right. We had a couple new spoilers. We got Quicksmith Spy. You got that one pulled up, Rob?
Let me get there real quick.
I'm already there. I got it.
All right.
Okay.
Quicksmith Spy.
Read it off then.
Quicksmith Spy is a 3 and a blue for a creature, human artificer, 2 power, 3 toughness. When Quicksmith Spy enters the battlefield, target artifact you control gains tap, colon, draw card for as long as you control Quicksmith Spy. This is a rare.
Yeah, so I'm thinking there's going to be a cycle there with this one and the red one that makes it tap shock or whatever.
Yep.
So that's going to be interesting to see what, you know, white, green, and black do. I'm actually more excited about those, I think. I mean, tap draw card's not the worst. It's automatically going to replace itself, but you're going to draw a card even if they kill it, you know, but... I don't know.
Strong
if card. A deck like yeah, for sure. Depending on how many other artifacts there are that you're going to be playing randomly, but and as far as standard goes, maybe not so much. Modern, maybe a one of in a lantern. Not the worst thing I've heard.
Nah,
but I don't know. Do you guys see this thing play anywhere else?
No, this is a strong limited card. Yep. That's where I see this.
Yeah,
I thought a lantern, but...
I mean, maybe this can help make... Go ahead, Chris.
I thought a lantern, like you had said, but my only thing then is lantern, for the most part, against all its other matchups, doesn't have a lot of interaction, meaning the opponent can't interact with them, and this gives them a way to interact with them, so I don't see the super upside of it.
Yeah, I don't. That's what I said. Maybe, but maybe somebody in standard can figure out Tameo's Journal. Like that card's really powerful. Maybe this will help by just making it have value and or having random clues laying around, draw cards without, you know, paying mana. But and then we got the biggest disappointment of them all, Tezzeret the Schemer.
All right, so. Tezzeret the Schemer is 2 blue and black for a planeswalker type Tezzeret. Enters the battlefield with 5 loyalty. +1, create a colorless artifact token named Ethereum Cell with tap, sacrifice this artifact, colon, add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. -2, target creature gets +X/-X until end of turn, where X is the number of artifacts you control. And his ultimate, -7, you get an emblem with at the beginning of combat on your turn. Target artifact you control becomes an artifact creature with base power and toughness 5/5.
All right, so I do want to talk about some things before I start just knocking on him here.
Okay.
One thing to note about the ultimate is every combat you get another 5/5. It's not just, you know, one time, and they stay a 5/5.
Yep.
So that is relevant. The +X/-X is also relevant because it can be a pump spell on your own creature if it doesn't kill it. Say you have 2 artifacts, you can give it +2/-2 if it's like a something 3. And the plus, yeah, that's a thing. Maybe if there's a reward for artifacts dying, because you can crack them and, you know, kind of like a Disciple of the Vault kind of thing. However, he doesn't protect himself very well at all. Once again, it's another planeswalker that like ramps, and that's usually not the best ability. Like looking at Chandra, Torch of Defiance, that's usually not a very used ability.
Mm-hmm.
And also, that emblem does not end the game fast. It could end the game depending on how many artifacts you have, but then you also run the risk of your turning things into creatures, which can then be killed. So, all in all, this is a disappointment for me. What do you guys think?
I think this is a fine card. I don't think it's format breaking. Although it could be, in a sense. We've seen previous blue-based planeswalkers always happen to be based on card advantage. This is really the first one I've seen that actually gives some version of mana advantage. And winning the mana battle in a control and mid-range games is vitally important, and this card does that relatively well. As for his middle ability, he requires artifacts in order to protect himself well. However, if you have that cast of cards to do that, he can do it twice. So there is that. But the ultimate, I'm on the same page as you. 5-5 every turn doesn't end the game fast enough.
Rob, got anything to add?
I'm on the boat with you. He doesn't protect himself very well. I don't like him. I'm trying to see where he can see utility. I'm trying to force him into different decks right now that currently exist in Standard, where artifacts are heavy. So like your Storm decks with Paradoxical Outcome, and other ones like that. I really don't see a lot with him.
Got anything to add, Chris?
No, not really. I'm just kind of underwhelmed.
Gotcha. I actually wish he had the 6-drop plane deck or planeswalker deck Tezzeret's Plus, honestly.
Yeah, it would be really strong on him. The card advantage on that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you said.
Yeah, then he would be playable.
It's like you said, we've never seen most of the planeswalkers with mana ramp abilities don't usually see play. But this does stick the token on the battlefield, and it does stay. So maybe this is what it takes. I don't know how good gaining mana is right now because there's just no control deck. But that deck needs to exist in order for this to be playable.
Yeah, and the worst part is he's only going to see play in Standard if he sees play, because in no way, shape, or form is this ever going to be better than Agent Obolus.
No, but Agent Obolus is a broken card, so...
Nah. Yeah.
That's an unfair comparison.
This is it for Tez. He sees this Standard, then never again. But, pretty disappointing for me. Now, in other Planeswalker news, a Johnny Steadfast, just way up there in price, shot up, $17 now. The last card, the time this card saw play was green, white, hardened scales in Standard. It is not currently seeing play in a modern deck. So yeah, that's a thing. What do you guys think?
Commander.
I think, yeah, the Atraxa deck wants to play that Ajani. So this, I mean, that Ajani in particular is awesome in that deck. So that might be it. Atraxa might be driving up the price.
Yeah, just wants the minus ability in a Planeswalker Super Friend deck.
Yep.
I guess.
That's it, man. I mean, Commander does mess with prices. It's not really fun, but it's whatever.
Looking at you, Damnation.
Yeah, we're looking at you. Who knows, maybe one day they'll reprint Damnation in Standard. Clearly it won't be this one.
I'm holding out for this Modern Masters.
That's actually a good point. It'll be a Mythic. That'll be the worst part,
too. Sure. Well, yeah, sure, but like, more copies is more copies, so.
Yeah, good point.
Let's see, other news. We learned Jerry still makes mixtapes on his cassette boombox.
Don't use that cassette boombox in the back, bro.
Yeah.
That's really it for news.
Yeah, like I said, it's an off time, basically, for Magic. There's not big tournaments right now because nobody wants to have them around the holidays. It's the holidays, and also spoiler season is temporarily on hold unless we get some leaks. So that's going to do it for news for us. We're going to come back and talk. Welcome back, everybody. For this part, we're just gonna talk about stuff. We're taking it easy. It's the holidays. We're just relaxing. So, have you guys seen Rogue One?
Yes.
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 Oh, perfect. We've all seen it, so we can go all in. Spoilers for any listeners, because I'm not gonna hold back. I don't care.
No, me neither. If you haven't watched,
if you haven't seen it yet, Yeah, go watch it. I don't know why you wouldn't have seen it by now.
Yeah, you failed. You failed at life.
Yeah. So overall, what'd you guys think? Was it did it fit your Star Wars hunger, you know?
I was crying at the end. It was amazing.
Yeah. It was pretty glorious. Actually, the gloriousness of the Death Star was... the CGI in general in this movie, they crushed it.
Yeah, they did really good with it. I completely forgot that the gentleman who played Tarkin was dead.
Oh, yeah. He's dead like 20 years ago.
Been dead for like, I know, two, 3 decades. I don't know.
Yep.
But that and, CGI,
like, it blew my mind, and I had to get on and look. It's like, there's no way he's still alive. And yep, that's when I saw that. And it's like, that was outstanding how they put him into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, the CGI for Tarkin and then a young Carrie Fisher, they straight killed it.
That wasn't CGI. That was just some 19-year-old they found to look like a young Carrie Fisher.
Wow, I thought that was CGI. Damn. No. What, did that Carrie Fisher just make clones of herself that I don't know about?
So anyway, no, the Death Star firing on cities, it was actually, in a way, it was more epic to me to see the smaller scale destruction. Because, in the first movies when the Death Star fired, it was just kind of like a cheesy ring explosion, and that was it. But, that devastation was just so good.
Mm-hmm.
The way the explosion just continued to exceed upward into the atmosphere, and then the way the rocks were, curving into each other, what is going on?
Yeah, it basically made, rock waves. Yeah, the aftershock was just basically a rock wave cruising through the land. Ugh. Fucking brutal. There was a lot of callbacks to everything. I mean, they were calling back even Rebels and animated series and stuff and old video games.
Yeah, they did.
So that was nice. It definitely. I think it was a little heavy-handed on some of it, though. I didn't need all that nostalgia, just because it was set, previous to episode 4. So this is with those movies. I understand that. You don't have to remind me every 5 minutes, but. What did you think? Was it the right amount, too much?
I think it was better than all of the, I'm going to use the South Park term, all the member berries we had in The Force Awakens.
Okay.
I think they did a really good job of, because some of them, sure, you probably could have done without, but it was great just running into the gentleman and the beast from that would later run into Obi-Wan. Yeah. they just casually brush up against them, and then that was it. The brief cameo with 3PO and R2-D2, I think that was just there to remind you of, hey, these two are going to play a critical role in the next movie, so we need to try to either, one, fit them in somewhere, or just give them a little light. And it didn't center around it too much.
Actually, that kind of goes in with the ending of the movie, once again, I've already said spoilers, if you're still here, you're an idiot. When the as it ends and the ship's pulling away, it's basically set up to, you can just straight plug in 4 and watch it, and that's the opening of 4 is that ship pulling away.
Oh yeah, if you get rid of the opening crawl from A New Hope and just slap the beginning of A New Hope in, then you're set.
Yeah, fits right in. Spoiler alert: they're going to Tatooine.
God damn it! Everything I know is a lie. did you guys? I liked that there was no crawl on this one, and I liked that they hinted to a crawl with the rings of the planet in the opening.
Yes,
yeah, they hinted it was to like, it, and it felt like the biggest troll ever. I'm like, you got me.
Well, they did put out that they weren't going to do a crawl because I guess they're saving that for saga episodes. But really, I mean, they could have even called this a saga, and it would have been perfect.
Yeah, just because it ends so well into 4. Speaking of the ending, once again, if you haven't seen it, you're still here. You're wrong. Get out of here. Go see it. Yeah. And if you have seen it, cool. Let's talk about it here. Vader, man. I didn't get the original Star Wars in the theater. I didn't get that experience. But this movie gave me the Vader I always wanted. Oh. As a Star Wars fan.
Oh yeah.
That
Like
it wasn't the slow lumbering Vader that we're kind of used to with episodes 4, 5, and 6. No, this was he's moving with a purpose to murder.
Yeah. And also he was so just imposing. And like James Earl Jones coming back for the voice, like,
oh, yes.
it was good. It actually gave me goosebumps in the theaters, like the first time, like the door opening and the light behind him, and you're like, oh, he's gonna fuck some shit up. Like,
yeah, he came in there to end some lives. And the choreography behind it was, it almost matched to purpose with like the Battlefront video games, and I loved that. Like, just that little bit there was enough to satisfy me in what little lightsaber combat the movie actually has.
Right. And also, Vader dropped a pun. Come on.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah.
That... Vader pun. Don't choke on your own.
I love that we had a force choke scene, but that I think we could have done without it.
You didn't like the Darth Dad joke?
Yeah, don't choke on your own ambition. Ha, ha, ha. Got me.
Yeah, no, I actually did like seeing Force choke in the combat or in that corridor where he's just like, choke you, fucking deflect that thing. Like,
pull the dude on the ceiling, slice him in half while he's still up on the ceiling, deflect laser beams, just
wonderfully done. They got the essence of Vader choking out people and cutting them up. Like, let's get it on.
And just because of that, now I want a movie that's before this movie that's just Vader fucking shit up. Like, just follow a year of Vader, of his exploits, just ending Rebels. Like,
I'm just saying, a Star Wars Force Unleashed movie where you take out Jaden and just input Vader's parts would be enough. Like, I think that would be just a great series in its own. Then again, you could say that for any expanded universe video game, and they would kill it. Just too easy.
Yeah.
Did anyone catch the blue milk in the beginning?
Yes.
Okay, I'm just checking. I'm like, blue milk. Blue milk.
A lot of the some of the Easter eggs and stuff, they really hit you over the head with it. I thought they were a little too heavy-handed with stuff.
Yeah. They were definitely heavy on them, but I enjoyed them. Although, got the kick out of them.
It felt like, you know, the K2SO hammer arm. He just came down on you. He's like, nostalgia. Bam.
I really enjoyed K2SO.
Oh, I loved him.
I did too.
Loved him. I really was hoping he would just say meat bag just once, but he never did. I was a little sad by that, but I'll accept it. They did a great job with him.
Yep, no, he was good. But another thing it's something that's bothered me with the Star Wars movies all throughout now, and I'm hoping they change this for the Han Solo, the young Han Solo movie. Can I get one main character that calls their mom and dad every now and again? Like, still has parents that are alive, you know, calls them on a Sunday or something, has a decent relationship. Like, every main character in these movies, just their parents just abandon them or die. Like,
yeah, it's what the Empire's about, man. They go around killing parents and stuff, ruining families. I mean, I get where they were coming from. They made a real good story.
Well, also, but, like, it's getting old as, like, a reoccurring character-driven theme. Like, it's getting old.
Okay. Well, I mean,
Disney owns the movies. You're going to have dead parents. That's a Disney thing.
True. Han might have Lion living King. Parents. Mufasa dies.
Bambi's mom dies.
I'm just saying, James Earl Jones dies just as often as Sean Bean does, all right?
I mean, that's true, but like, every movie just, there's the tortured kid trying to, you know, like, I get it. It's good motivation for somebody to actually like rise up and do something, but you don't have to use it every time. Like, I actually hope in the young Han Solo movie, Han Solo's parents are alive, and he just starts, like, at their house or something. Like, hey, have a good day, and then he goes out on his adventure, you know?
Him and his dad palling around. When they make the new Han Solo movie, he's going to do the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs.
Just so they can, you know, actually say that's a real thing? I don't care.
Yeah, man, I mean, they got to do it. That's what he's known for. That's, like, his big thing.
As long as Greedo shoots first, I don't care.
Oh, dude, shut your mouth. God bless. Oh, man. Han shot first. Just like the guy in Rogue One did. He shot first. He shot the stormtrooper, and he shot the dude in the back. good enough for me.
Yeah.
They made him out to be a killer.
I wouldn't mind seeing how Han and Chewie meet up, and then Han's rescue of Chewie.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, I'm not familiar with this part of the expanded universe, but I'm pretty sure it had to do with the Kessel Run. Because the Kessel Mines is where Wookiees are sent to enslavement camps.
Right.
So I'm pretty sure that has something to do with it.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm also hyped for young Lando.
Yes, young Lando. He's still a traitor.
See if he steals his clothes.
Yes, yes. He will wear exactly what Han wears in the young Han movie. Exactly. Has to.
Hey, man, sweet jacket. Oh, I just happen to have the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, maybe we'll get to see young Pancake Face, because I forget his name. Lando's buddy.
Oh, Neb Numb. Are you looking at
I hear Rob Googling it.
Rob, it's Neb yep. Numb. He's a Celestian.
Pancake Face, Star Wars.
They sound like they're speaking some Italian Arabic mix. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like Ewoks speak Tibetan.
Okay.
They do. They actually. That's actually a thing. Ewoks speak Tibetan.
Chris, you're awful quiet over there. Are you okay? You just like locked
in
that.
I'm taking it all in because I haven't gone to the extreme of Star Wars that other people have. So I like getting the little things that I miss. That it's like, yeah, I did see that.
That was indeed in that movie I watched that one time.
That was.
Yeah.
I will say one thing I liked about this movie is it stepped away from all the other Star Wars movies, and this was just a brutal war movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's a lot of the complaints I've seen online. People were expecting it to be like a previous Star Wars movie, and it's like, no. You can't do that. That's how you get jaded like this. That's how you get these, it wasn't that good, or, you know, there was no character development or whatnot. It's like, it's about war.
Yeah, the character development
actually,
was
I
what
think
you
there
got.
Was, yeah, I think it was surprisingly good for, like, a pretty big ensemble cast during a war zone. Like, right? you got everybody's motivation. You knew what they were there for. And then, yeah.
And what was even sweeter was it wasn't the all be all happy ending of most Star Wars movies to some extent, you know, barring the fifth movie, Empire, you know, that ending had Han being carried away. But, you know, here we have everyone dying. I loved it. This is probably my favorite of all Star Wars movies right now. I mean, granted, I just saw it a day ago, but you know what? I don't care. This might actually end up being my favorite.
Yeah. I was actually upset everyone died, not because like I didn't expect it. I understood that it was probably going to happen. But there had been this fan theory rolling around on the internet now for a while, and it made a lot of sense. They put out a book of like concept art and stuff for Episode 9, and in there they had kind of brief character descriptions and like code names for all the Knights of Ren. And all the Knights of Ren matched up extremely well with the Rogue One characters. So there was this huge theory that Rogue One was actually just going to get captured and then like brainwashed into the Knights of Ren. I thought that was a really sweet theory. So that's what I was hoping for, but that didn't happen.
I mean, whenever concept art comes out, a lot of people who do spin-off stuff, like from the Clone Wars cartoon series, for example, when you see Darth Maul again, they used a lot of concept art to make the Dathomir planet and all of the Dathomir witches. So that something like that might not be completely out of the question.
Yeah, because like even the leader of the Knights of Ren is like was codenamed Rogue and stuff like that. So everybody's like, oh, it's them. Like
they're gonna be there.
Like there's a
so gonna be there.
Yeah, there's a monk one with a staff, and everybody's like, oh, it's fucking Donnie Yen. But which also he was one of my favorite characters.
Donnie Yen rocked it. It was great.
Yeah, just like his just pure faith in the Force.
This is not how the Force which, works.
right.
The mantra.
Not how any
bro.
Of this works. But,
the mantra.
No, well, it's interesting because he's one of the few characters that can come back because his group, the Wills, that was mentioned a couple times, were actually the ones who taught Qui-Gon Jinn how to Force Ghost. So there is a chance he can just Force Ghost, even though he wasn't a Force user.
Yep, there is that odd possibility.
Yeah, and he did say, you know, look for me in the Force. So, like, there's a chance he can actually come back and train somebody in you know, to fight or something, which would be pretty sweet if, like, Rey gets, like, a Ghost Council training session and learn staff from Donnie Yen. Like, oh. Because she was already using a staff on Jakku, so.
Yep. She even used her lightsaber like a staff, like we talked about last year. Holy crap, nostalgia.
Yeah. So that would be sweet to see.
I'm at least glad, in comparison to Force Awakens, where that movie really was just nothing but a nostalgia trip, at least Rogue One wasn't complete nostalgia. You know, that felt kind of nice. I enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yeah. And like I said, it wasn't nostalgia based, but then they hit you over the head with it, which is like my one qualm with the movie.
Yeah, when the nostalgia comes, it's like a friggin' hammer in the face. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it was not subtle.
It was none of it was subtle. It was all obvious.
Yeah, the one thing I did want from Rogue One that Force Awakens nailed was I wish, since we had a pilot, and K2SO to an extent was also a pilot, I wanted some air combat. Like, Force Awakens killed, like having Poe Dameron in the X-Wing and Finn on the ground, and, like, the mismatch of that combat was great. But in this one, every time it was, like, aerial, but it's also space, but, like, aerial combat, it would cut to, like, a random, you know, Empire guy in a TIE fighter, and he's just, you know, black mask. And it's like, I don't know who this guy is. I don't care. I'm not invested in anything in this aerial battle.
I mean, we did see Red 5 die, so there's the opening for Luke.
There's how Luke gets that.
Yeah. And actually, that was another thing. They used CGI for Red and Gold Leader.
Yes.
Before they die in the trenches.
It was the same guys. I was like, wow. Well, they CGI. Went really hard in there. I mean, you know what I mean. You know what I meant. CGI guys, but they used the same characters in the
and
same
yet,
voices.
And yet, no Porkins.
No Porkins. Come on. They had a fat guy. They had a fat guy pilot, but he did not go by Porkins. Was a little upset.
Right. Yeah. But no, and that's it. Like, yeah, we knew some of those guys, but I wanted more of that. Because there was, like, aerial combat going on in the background, which I guess is good in its own way. It's not trying to copy what Force Awakens did, and it did still have, you know, things going on in the background, which is nice. Force Awakens nailed that part so well that I would have liked to have seen it.
You mentioned space combat, and there is something that they did do that they really did nail. Like, usually in each of the movies, a Star Destroyer or a ship, you know, gets damaged and crashes into another ship. We've seen that, but it was nice to see, hey, the Admiral makes an order to get one of the Hammerhead cruisers to push a ionically charged Imperial Star Destroyer into another one. I really did enjoy that. They took cruiser combat to another level, and I hope they go back to that in the Saga series.
Watching that Star Destroyer get pretty much sawed in half by that other one was just beautiful.
Yeah. And they actually understood that the thing is massive and it's going to have isolated explosions and the whole thing just isn't going to go.
Right.
It's like it is going to remain mostly intact. And also the Hammerhead is a nice throwback because actually those ships first appeared in Rebels. So they weren't even from like a main thing.
Yes, yeah, they were all there. None of those ships were unseen. Like, the Rebel Transport, the Corellian Corvette, the Hammerhead, they were all there. Nothing new. So, good throwbacks.
Yep.
Good on Disney for keeping true to the continuity of the saga.
That was also... that was the part of the movie where I really started getting pumped. Like, you know, because obviously they're pretty much going on a suicide mission at this point. And then all of a sudden you see space like, oh yeah, get a hold of Admiral so-and-so, and then poof, he's right there.
No, Admiral, yeah, Admiral Akbar wasn't
Akbar,
there.
And he's like, yeah, I'm here to mess stuff up. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, Frogger, get it.
No, because like it was a good climax because it gave you like this sense of hope, which is the whole movie was kind of pushing for, that like, hey, maybe a couple of these guys might actually get out of here, you know? Maybe they can actually, you know, win the space combat and get them out of there.
Yeah. Well, that, and it was like, it makes you wonder, did he know the other crew was going there? Because he, you know, he was the one, hey, we need to strike now. We need to do something now. And they're like, nope, not without, you know, the will of the council or whatever. Yeah. And then he shows up when they're there, like, I got your back. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah. Also, I like the design of his ship, like where the helm was, so he could actually like look down and see the planet. That was well designed too.
Yeah.
But, and there was also that sweet scene where they tried to like warp away as a Star Destroyer warped in. Just
oh man, yeah,
that's right. They all tried to escape via light speed. Some people got away, and others just boom right into it.
Get yeah, wrecked.
Like seeing the Rebel transport just go into it, and you can see it just splinter apart. Wonderfully done. I did not expect that, honestly.
Because yeah. It's Vader. You know, like they said, Vader was going to take care of everybody up there, and he did.
Yeah, he did.
Like the other two Star Destroyers did like nothing, and Vader's popped in. He's like, "Yeah, they're dead now." Like,
well, and how they left it too, you know, because. Because he goes on his little spree, you know, like a kid in a candy store. Oh, I get to be psychopathic, yay!
Oh yeah, just like God amongst mortals.
But you never see him make it to the Admiral, so it's like, what are they gonna do?
I was really curious to see how close they were gonna take it. Like we all know how the movie is gonna end. For especially those who have seen the original trilogy, you know that yeah. They get the plans to who they need to get to. But still, like whenever that one rebel fighter is at the door that's jammed, and he's trying to get that other guy to just take the hard drive, which is effectively what it was—a massive hard drive.
Yeah,
I had a lot of anxiety there. It's like, oh shit, are they actually going to get it? And it's like, oh wait, yeah, they do, because you know R2-D2 gets it, and Luke and. Aunt May dies and all that other bad stuff. So
yeah, and Uncle Baru. No, I agree. I had a thing I was gonna say and I totally slipped my mind now.
Oopsies. Must have not been very important.
Because the first door cut, I really thought that was the beginning of 4.
Yeah,
that was I think that was another like, ooh look, here's another heavy-handed nostalgia throwback. Everyone thought they were on 4, like how earlier in the movie we thought we were going to get an opening scrawl, but we didn't.
Right.
So
one thing that they did do, so that you know, they went back and they did reshoots, and apparently with the reshoot they had a new director. Do you think movies should do that more often?
Depends on if the director sucks or not. As long as they maintain the same concept of what they were trying to do with the movie, I think it's okay. Just as long as you don't go like, I don't know, you're trying to make a serious Star Wars movie and then new director comes in and just decides, all right, we're just going to make this like episodes 4, 5, and 6. Like, that would have aggravated me.
Right.
I think it also depends what the reshoots were, because like, I don't know offhand. I didn't look into that part of it. You know, if it's particular parts or particular characters that they need to change, or if there's just, you know, they were trying to shore up some continuity issues or what, you know.
I mean, what it does do, though, is if you get, like, a special edition of this, I'm pretty sure they have all those deleted scenes, and you're going to have, like, an hour-long deleted scene section. Like, that'd be pretty sweet, something to watch.
I don't think it was that massive of a reshoot, was it?
It could have been. It's in theory, man. I don't know the details behind it either. It could have been... It might just be a couple of scenes, like you said, continuity issues and so on and so forth. But a whole new director coming in and doing something, I expect a few, quite a bit more, but not too many.
Yeah. I mean, the real only inconsistency I had with the movie was the pilot. Just because he started out more insane because of the tentacle monster. And then he by the end of it, he was just like a normal guy. Like, he was functioning completely fine.
Yeah, no, yeah. He ended up getting over it, and then originally Forrest Whitaker said, oh, no, you're not going to get over this. You're going to lose your mind.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean...
So that could have been one of the reshoots. They might have left him insane the whole time, and it got weird or something, but...
You could pose an argument and say his Imperial training as a pilot might be good enough for him to have not lost his mind, but even then, you're stretching the bounds of reason a little bit too much there.
I mean, he was also just a cargo pilot. So he's not like a, you know, not like a TIE fighter pilot.
Yeah, he's not like
super trained.
Yeah, he's not like super trained or anything. Like I said, you're stretching the bounds of reason with that one.
Yes.
He's the merchant marines of the Empire.
Man, that was a call out. Just flat out blow them out.
No respect. All right. Jerry, I know you got Sun, right?
Yes, I did. I got Moon. I bought my little brother Moon for Christmas.
What do you think of that one? I mean, it's a pretty new take on the series.
It is.
What do you think?
All right, so the whole collecting, like, the badges actually mean something now. Like, outside of the trade thing, instead you get these little Z-power gems, which allow you to use a special move that costs one power point of a move type that you have, which was pretty sweet. Like, the original badges, they were just level caps, and we didn't really care about that. But now we have... There's actually something to do with them, which is pretty awesome. As for the storyline itself, I mean, it's pretty substandard stuff. Bad team and supervillain on top with usually, like nowadays, there's always someone's villain and there's always another kid who's a complete bum about it. So, I mean, it's pretty much a standard Pokemon game, but they did do some pretty sweet upgrades to, like, breeding and stuff and such if you're into that. Like, breeding is easier now more than ever. There's a new type of battle system, which I enjoy, which is the multiplayer battle where you can go four people, throw in one Pokemon, and then battle royale. I like that. But beyond that, that's what I think of it.
What do you think about the whole Ultra Beast thing?
The Ultra Beast, you know, funny enough, I haven't actually caught an Ultra Beast yet because I've been breeding. I picked up Null, type Null from the... I can't remember his name. The anti-hero boy who gets all butt hurt with his own type Null. Gives you one, and it's supposed to be really good against these beasts. Well, it's been really good competitively, and I've been training it up and getting it ready. But they sound pretty sweet. I mean, it's a different take on legendary creatures. It's not the typical... I mean, we still have our, you know, Solgaleo and then whatever the moon one's called. But you get where I'm coming from.
Lunella.
Yeah. Pretty vanilla stuff, but it's a nice take on... At least it's not a bunch of Muinites anymore, like Uxie, Miesprit, and Azelf. It's a whole different breed of type of Pokemon that considered legendary, but not exactly just legendary types.
Right. You know, I've actually caught the four Ultra Beasts I can get in Moon, and I was actually excited just because they have some pretty sweet typings. It's like Bug Fighting, Steel Flying, and then the last one, the big one, like the level 70, kind of like Mewtwo-esque one, is actually like Dark Dragon. So they're pretty sweet.
Oh, it had to be Dark Dragon? Dang it. That's such a bad typing.
Why?
It's a bad typing mix since Fairy's been around. Fairies do four times damage.
Sure, but
to
it's
it.
Still really sweet.
It is sweet. You're not wrong.
But he's actually really harder to catch, because he knows Thrash and like has really high attack.
And you'll
so like you yeah.
So
yeah, I'd use. Have you caught? I don't know if you caught a Tapu yet or not, but they have the nature ability move where it has their HP. So you just use that a bunch to where like they're catchable. But at that point, he's used Thrash enough. He's confused and he's just like, gonna knock myself out now.
Yeah,
bam.
Aggravating. I'll get you. No, because you use a false swipe to get him down to one hit point. You try to paralyze him, he'll still confuse and he'll still hit that 50% hit rate even when he's paralyzed. Like, straight aggravating.
Yeah.
The same thing was happening when I was trying to catch Dittos because they kept. What was it that I sent out? I was using a Nidoking that I got traded to me that knew Thrash and it knew Thrash and False Swipe, and they kept knocking themselves out, and I was getting so frustrated with it.
Nice. Have you done much legendary hunting yet? Have you caught like all the Tapus and all that?
I caught the one you were required to catch, the Fairy Thunder one, Fairy Lightning one. But again, I've been doing a bunch of breeding. Like, if you ask me breeding questions, I can give you answers on that.
See, I don't believe that, Jerry.
Yeah.
Like, maybe in Pokemon, but not in the real world.
Oh. I'd give you an answer to that, too. not happening anytime soon.
Can you though?
The SOS battle feature. How about that? That is, I like SOS battling way more than horde battling. I thought horde battles were aggravating. Like, now trying to catch a Pokemon on an SOS battle can be difficult because you can only have one Pokemon out to throw a ball at it. But if you throw an Adrenaline Orb to keep, you know, the better Pokemon with the higher IVs to come, you might throw a ball, it might fail, and then he immediately calls another guy out. So then you got to knock him out, then he'll do his attack, and then he'll call for another guy, and he'll keep coming out. Like, that can get a little aggravating, but you'll end up getting some pretty powerful Pokemon that way.
Yeah, I agree. It's aggravating. And also trying to catch Toxapex, the lesser form of it, I forget what it is, where you have to find a Corsola, and it has a 20% chance to call on it and stuff.
Yeah. You know, there's a
pretty annoying.
It's a 10% find rate for Corsola, and then a 20% call rate for Corsola to find Marianne.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, you know what else is, you know what else is really aggravating to catch? And this took me a solid 3 hours to get down. Wimpod.
Oh, yeah.
That thing, well, first off, the thing is powerful. Like, the thing is not a joke. Its typing is relevant, and its move pool right. is wide and varied, and it actually has busted stats when it evolves. But that Wimp Out ability is just unbelievable. Like, it's just going to run away. Like, I ended up just throwing quick balls at it, just trying to quick ball them, and I
mean,
ended up
it's the same as Abra, you know, or any of the other.
Yeah, but,
which they actually nerfed Abra.
Yeah, but Abra is catchable. You could still put an Abra to sleep, and it's not going to teleport away. You can try to put to sleep a Wimpod, but if you do damage to the Wimpod, it's still going to wimp out, regardless if it's asleep or not.
Right.
Like, that is dumb.
Yeah, they actually upset me by nerfing Abra/Kadabra, because at 16... when it, or 21, I can't remember now, but when it evolves for the first time, it's supposed to learn Confusion. It doesn't learn that anymore. It learns, like, Agility or something stupid.
Ooh, that's hard.
Or I think it's, yeah. So, like, it doesn't even learn a real move until, like, Psybeam.
Bro, and you guys got trained. Train it up?
Yeah, it was so rough, though. I did it because it's, my favorite Pokemon, but dang, was it rough.
You mentioned nerfs. At least there's one nerf that I'm really happy about. And this is for competitive battling. They nerfed every status type. Like, every status typing got a nerfing. Like, Burn used to do 1/8 of your hit point and damage per turn. Now it's just a 16th, so Leftovers can cure you past your Burn. Paralyze now only cuts your speed in half, where now you can use 2 agilities and you regain your speed. It used to be where you'd have to use 4 agilities to regain your speed. Like, that was ridiculous. So I love what they did with that, and they nerfed specifically the move Scald, where it had a 60% burn chance, and they dropped it to 30%.
Which is reasonable.
Yeah, very reasonable. For those who are into competitive battling, Jerry is. 2 pokes done. I got Null done, and I got Toxapex. 4 more to go.
See, like, when you say you're to competitive battling, like, I just imagine you going to, like, a comic book store beating up 8-year-olds.
Well, they don't do that at comic book stores, man. The only time you see, like, competitive battling is at cons and such. They don't really have that around anywhere. Not anywhere I've ever lived. Like, they don't...
Get over here, Danny.
Yeah.
Do you take Danny's lunch money after you beat him, too?
Absolutely. Every time. Dude, remember those days back in school when you played Yu-Gi-Oh? Like, dude, you bet your blue eyes Toon Dragon? I'll bet my blue eyes, and you cheat and try to get the card.
Okay.
I never played now, Yu-Gi-Oh.
Shoot,
I played the first set of Yu-Gi-Oh, and I had a blue eyes white dragon. It was the shiz. But speaking of Yu-Gi-Oh, I don't know how your movie theater was, but before mine, I had a preview of a new Yu-Gi-Oh movie coming to theaters, and they had the advertisement for buying a ticket, getting a promo card. I don't know if Yu-Gi-Oh knows what year it is, but, like, Promo cards at movies was years ago. Yeah, I think they missed the market on that
They've been always doing that whenever they air a movie on like at a theater. They still don't stop doing that. It's quite aggravating, honestly.
But why?
I don't know. People like kids will cry to their parents, "Oh, I want a card." You know, stuff like that.
Exactly like that?
Exactly like that, man. Kids are... Dude, this is why I could never have kids. I hear their voices, and I just want to run a nail gun into my temple. Like, the high-pitched voice. Jeez, dude,
that's a little harsh.
I can't...
Don't let them stop you.
By the way, if you're like the one... If you're like the one... Don't let it stop me. If you're the one female listening to this, you better have, like, a nice mezzo-soprano to alto-sounding voice. I can't handle that high-pitched squealing. Just makes me want to just knock the vocal cords out of you. Oh, I can't handle it.
Are you done? Yeah. Are you done with the rant, Jerry?
I'm done with the rant. That was a solid minute. That was okay. A solid like 15 seconds of, oh my God, Jerry ranted.
I mean, I heard none of it because you cut out, so it's fine for me.
it's gonna be wonderful then.
No, it's not. It's going to be awful.
You think I listen to this podcast? Get out of here. we've been at it here for a little bit. Any closing thoughts we want to say here besides, you know, the usual happy holidays stuff?
Actually, yes, we do have a winner announcement to make.
Oh, yeah. Dun.
For those who do not follow us on twitch.tv, we are doing different giveaways at different increments. We put out what the next increment is going to be and what the prize is. This time it was at 75, and we're giving away an Eternal Masters Jace the Mind Sculptor. It was at our 75th follower, and we hit it Tuesday night. And so I've got everybody typed up that is currently following us. I've randomly assorted them. So now we're just going to do the random number generator. But
let me get out my bingo ball.
Yes, I was going to say, as tradition, bingo ball.
I can't keep doing that.
All right, we're good?
Yeah, we're good.
It is. It is Twitch username JLYB75. So if that's your Twitch username, please like us on Facebook, send us your mailing information so then we can get this mailed out to you. Also, send us a message on Twitch. That is required so I can verify that it's you and somebody else isn't trying to, you know, be who they aren't. So JLYB75, congratulations on winning the Jace the Mind Sculptor and some sweet Snapcast score pads. Stick around. We're currently discussing what our next increment is going to be and what the prize is going to be. And it's going to be a little bit more value than this. And we're slowly going to increment it up to a certain point. I mean, we can't get to the area where we're giving away like an unlimited Mox Ruby or something. That's not going to happen.
Never.
I'm going to keep that.
Give away Jerry. That's going to be the ultimate. Just give away Jerry.
Yes, you get Jerry for a weekend.
<get to Jerry. laughs>
Hey, you get me for a weekend, bae.
Oh my gosh. Never mind. You don't want it. Nobody wants that. There goes all our followers. We worked so hard for it. Oh, man. All right. Chris, got anything at the end here? Bring us back to reality. Not out of Jerry.
I do not. Go watch Rogue
Man,
One.
Man, Chris is dead.
Chris is dead. We just cut him off.
Sure.
That's brutal. Yeah, watch Rogue
Go
One.
Go watch All Rogue right, One.
What do you got?
Man, I got nothing. Just happy holidays, yes, man.
Sorry, that was from Jerry. He said, go watch Rogue One. Okay, guys, so, No, go ahead, Jerry. Come on.
What?
Jerry has nothing.
What do you want from me? I really have nothing, man. This is like a slow time, man. Happy holidays. Play Pokemon Sun or Moon. Meet me in the lunchroom. I'll take your money.
At least you're not Rob, and you can actually go inside of schools. So
hey,
that's a plus.
Hey, that's under review,
dude. That stash is glorious.
That's under review. Oh, is it because you shaved the stash?
Yeah, yes.
Did you shave the stash? So they're reconsidering.
I'll have it back at the end of May.
I wish I could grow a stash like you, man. Mine still comes out as peach fuzz, and I'm 26.
If you have that at the end of May, you have to hold out until June for Vegas.
You know what? I can do that. I can stash it up in Vegas.
Yes. You're gonna get arrested on the strip. Out of all the creeps and freaks and weirdos in Vegas, they're gonna single you out, Rob.
Him, he looks creepy. That stash.
I'll admit, it's a magnificent stash, though. Like it's a magnificent stash. Like it looks like a baby fur is just laying on your upper lip. Like it's past woolly worm. Like it's small mammal now.
Dude, he's got a straight like caterpillar for an upper lip. It's wonderful.
We use the thickness to determine how hard of a winter it is going to be.
It's gonna be rough, boys. It's gonna be rough.
Oh no. Oh no. All right, well, that's going to do it for us this week. Take us out, Rob. You got this.
All right, guys. Thanks again for watching again from the Snapcast. Happy holidays. Be safe. Don't be stupid. Check out our website, www.thesnapcast.com. That's something that's not stupid. Another thing that's not stupid is to follow or subscribe to us on YouTube so we can be youtube.com/thesnapcast and not youtube.com/ I don't want to say all the random numbers and letters, but there's like 50 of them. Check us out on twitch.tv /thesnapcast, where Jerry and I do a whole bunch of streaming. We're getting Chris into it. Chris is going to do some streaming. Yep. And hopefully the new year we can try and experiment and see how good we can get with Alex streaming, because that'd be fantastic.
I mean, do you like pixelated magic?
Yes. It's going to be 8-bit magic.
Yeah, I could do that. I could stream that.
Nice. But stay with us as we do get more spoilers out. We finish out the 12 decks of Christmas, and 2017 is going to bring some nice stuff for us. That's going to do it for us here at the Snapcast.
Oh, snap.